Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Right. Yeah, now I'm here. You know, after all those diversions, don't remind me. There's an Easter egg hunt. This is cheerful news. This is what we need. Romney, Hythe and the Dymchurch Railway. They say all aboard for a fun-filled quiz on Saturday and Easter Sunday, April 16th and 17th. They'll be hiding 8 special Easter egg props along the line, and all you have to do is spot them all and fill in the quiz to redeem your prize. So that's the Romney, Hythe and Dymchurch Railway. They don't say the time or anything, so I guess we find their website and have a look.
Yeah. All right, look at this. This is Twitter for you. Twitter, the children that run Twitter, being stupid again. I can't receive any more tweets at the moment because my rate limit is exceeded.
Really?
I've had too many tweets in the last hour.
Well, that's a new thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that Elon Musk?
No. That's why Elon's not happy with it. He's going to kick bum.
The whole point of Twitter is for engagement.
Yeah. And have you looked at your engagement figures in the last couple of months? Mm. They've disappeared completely, haven't they?
Yeah.
They've just completely disappeared.
Being censored.
Yeah, we are definitely being censored.
I mean, on average.
And slowed. My timeline gets slowed.
This show, with the hashtag BeBunker, in an average week, we get 1.3 million engagements. Yeah, but that has, in the last 2 weeks, it's plummeted.
Mm. And people are losing followers, very, very strangely as well.
Yeah.
But my timeline gets slowed. There's a word for it, isn't it? When they slow it down. What's it called? Shadowing or something.
Oh, when they shadow ban you, yeah.
Yeah, well, they don't ban me. Well, they did ban me once, of course, when I said that word. It was ridiculous.
It was hilarious. She put a thing up.
Careful what you say.
I'm on the radio. They're not going to ban me here, are they? She put a thing up. She was having a drink, and she went, chink, chink. And they banned her straight away for being a racist.
It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. They banned me 48 hours.
Yeah.
It's just mad. Some ridiculous bot. Aside from Easter egg hunts, we've got an Easter adventure quest.
Right.
And this is at Dover Castle and Woolmer Castle. Explore the castle's secrets in a cracking adventure quest, which is filled with traditional Easter fun and games, and of course, a chocolate reward at the end. Families can take part in an exhilarating hunt around the grounds every day until Sunday, the 24th of April. Answer questions and undertake challenges to complete the mission and claim a chocolate prize and adventurer's certificate. Each Easter adventure quest costs £1.50 per child. That's really, really reasonable for members and non-members, in addition to the normal admission prices. So off you go to the Dover Castle and Woolmer Castle Easter adventure quest. That sounds great. I do love a bit of Easter fun, and I'm very upset that our two male guests have not dressed up as rabbits and things.
Absolutely. And listen, after all the trouble you got me into over the weekend, arguing with various loons about Operation Stack.
I used to wear loons in the 70s.
Operation Stack and Operation Brock. Euro Channel sent me an email. Yeah,
is that Channel or Tunnel?
Channel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they say the number of cars and lorries using the Channel Tunnel rocketed in March, primarily due to the suspension of P&O ferries. Comparing year-on-year figures, passenger traffic on Eurotunnel shuttle services shot up a staggering 220%. This is due to the same period last year, seeing cross-channel travel hit hard by travel restrictions due to the COVID crisis and deflating its numbers. The number of trucks it transported in last month alone was 139,283. That's a rise of 13% on the year. And passenger traffic stood at 122,319 compared to 38,000 last March. A spokesman for Getlink, the tunnel's parent company, explained it was driven by a favourable comparison basis and the shutdown of P&O ferries. The interesting thing is people don't realise this, they're obsessed with Dover as a port.
Yeah.
But it's actually only the 10th largest port. It's the biggest Ro-Ro port, but it's only the 10th largest
biggest
port.
Biggest what? Port?
Ro-Ro. What's roll Ro-Ro? On, roll off.
Oh, okay.
It's the biggest roll-on, roll-off port in the UK, but it's only the 10th largest port.
What's the biggest one? You have told me before, but I forgot.
Immingham.
Where's Immingham?
Grimsby.
Grimsby.
Yeah.
Okay. But there's another one as in the middle of England somewhere as well. Not Grimsby, but there's one more, isn't there, that we talk about?
Begins with F. You always get me with that.
Well, listeners will tweet in. But there's also, of course, Liverpool. Is that a
London. The second biggest port in the UK is London.
Okay, of course.
It's London Port is the second biggest. Immingham's first, London's the second. The place up in on the East Anglian coast that begins with F that everybody's heard of that I can
remember. Felixstowe.
That's him. Thank you, Mark.
I mean, it's a childhood beach holiday, isn't it, Felixstowe? Pebble Beach.
Liverpool. There's 120 ports in the UK. Dover isn't even the only port in Kent. There's two others. There's one at Chatham and there's one at Sheerness. There's a Ro-Ro port at Sheerness.
This is a new word for me, Ro-Ro. I do think we need to grab this opportunity.
Anyway, what I was saying...
To get more ports and rivers.
No, we don't. We don't. That's the whole point. We don't, yeah? Before the lockdown, before everything went...
don't say that.
Before everything went wrong in the last 2 years, the best year that Dover had in terms of truck transport, just trucks, not passengers, they transported 300,000 trucks in 2019. Mm. At the same period, Eurotunnel did 1.4 million trucks.
Wow.
Basically, people have moved to the train from the ferries.
Mm. I would rather go on a ferry, if I'm honest. I kind of like the whole thing, getting on, getting coffee.
Some truck drivers prefer it because it gives them their driver break.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Just another thing, just so people know, because this drives me bonkers with people not thinking about this. Back in 2015, when we had the massive problem with the channel, I don't know if you remember, we were shut for 7 weeks. And the whole of Kent ground to a halt and all the rest of it. We did a special programme on it on the radio here, and we talked about it a lot. But Operation Stack has been in place since 1989, and there's been 93 incidents of queuing since it was first implemented in 1989. And people go, well, why from 1989? Very simply this, in 1988... they started building the Channel Tunnel. And, of course, that caused massive disruption for a couple of years while they were building it. It then trebled the traffic to the same place because the Channel Tunnel, although it's at Folkestone, is on the same piece of road as the Dover Port. So you've added 1.4 million trucks to what is a single-lane road with three mini roundabouts. If you've ever driven into Dover, it's a nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
If you were a truck driver, it must be hell. Yeah. Because as you drive in on the single-lane road into the Western Docks, there's a series of three mini roundabouts you've got to negotiate. It's crazy stuff. Anyway.
I think awful for... I do feel sorry for the lorry drivers at the moment that are stuck in this.
Absolutely.
It's not good for their health. You know, sitting behind a wheel, they must need the loo and refreshments and rest. But also, it's not good for their heart to sit there. Plus the engine idling, which is worse than driving.
I dug out the blog we wrote after that show in July 2015.
Yeah.
And everything we put in there is still a problem.
Still
we said
happening.
This is unhygienic. They shouldn't be allowed to sit there. You need somewhere to park the trucks that has got toilet facilities,
showers,
that's got dining facilities, it's got shower facilities. You can't just leave people stuck on a bit of road.
No. And for the residents, it must be hell trying to get from A to B.
This isn't funny. Yeah, and I'm not suggesting it is, but do you see one of the drivers sadly died last week?
No. What, behind the wheel because of sitting? Or
no. He was desperately needed a poo.
Right.
And he was by the overhang of the motorway, and while he was doing it, he fell off.
No. Mm. This is awful. And has it been in the news?
Yeah. No, I swear, I saw it on the news.
I must find the link. That's awful for his family and everything. Yeah,
absolutely. It's disgusting. And
these people are trying to get from A to B and work.
But Highways England, who are responsible for this, completely wash their hands of it all the time. They just will not make any effort to do something about it. They put in a contraflow system. Wow. That only took 5 years to get that as well.
Well, why are they closing off all the motorways?
To park the lorries.
It's ridiculous.
It's silly, isn't it?
Yeah. Because Joanna found it very difficult to get here today as well.
Let me tell you how it works, and then we're going to talk to Mark, because we need someone sensible here.
Yeah.
But let me tell you how it works. What happens when they've cunningly renamed it? It's now no longer Operation Stack. It's now there's two things called TAP and BROC.
Yeah.
And TAP is a temporary thing. It's a temporary traffic management, and BROC is Operation Stack with a new name. Yeah.
Yeah.
TAP is just when the
why did they give it a new name? Just because Operation Stack was getting too unpopular.
Yeah, so all those
sweep
people
it went, under the carpet.
Never heard of Operation Stack, you're lying. Yeah. So basically, TAP is just if traffic's building up, it's a way of managing the traffic. It's primarily used for Eurotunnel rather than the port, but it just manages the traffic flow in. Yeah. Whereas Operation BROC, or Stack as it used to be, is a major incident when the ports are actually closed or almost totally closed and you've got too many trucks.
But it's constant now.
Let me explain. What they do is junction 8 to junction 10 of the N20, which is exactly 23 miles, yeah, they close that completely and park all the trucks on it.
Do you know what? You'd think they'd actually do something for that. If they know they're going to do it, why can't they, you know, preempt all of this for all these people that are stuck in their cabins and everything
else? At least some Portaloos. Yeah.
Put Portaloos down or even get some refreshment people there. Yeah. Keep some business flowing. Yeah. Okay, do it at a discounted rate or something so that at least they're fed, watered, and they can go to the bathroom.
We actually did a whole programme on that. Yeah. You're absolutely right, Joanna. We did a whole programme in 2015 that said, why don't you do these things? And they still don't do them.
But it's inhumane almost.
It's
terrible.
It's pathetically stupid. And the government
it's just not run properly, is it?
No, the government will... What happens is there's an argument between Kent County Council and the government and Highways England, and everybody's trying to pass the buck to everybody else. And quite rightly, Kent County Council is saying, well, it's not just because it's in Kent, yeah, it's not, you can't leave it just to us and the taxpayers of Kent to handle this. It's a national problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an international problem.
Well,
actually,
as I drive from Whitstable towards Ashford or Faversham or wherever I'm going, you see the lorry drivers and that coming towards Dover, heading back for miles, absolute miles. I don't know how I'll get home, actually.
People do talk a lot of rubbish about it as well. Of course, they go, well, it doesn't happen in France. Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, the A16 has exactly the same system as we do. They queue trucks back on the A16. I've come back from France in a car where I've been stuck for 3 hours on the outskirts of Calais waiting for the traffic to move. It happens on both sides because it's a congestion point. Mm.
The difference is that France has a bit more space, perhaps, than we have in Dover.
The thing that France has got going for it are all the...
gendarmes.
It's all I can't remember what they call them now, the ARAS, every 5 kilometres on the French motorway system, there's a rest area.
Yeah, with a little hole where you can go to the loo in.
Yeah, but most of them, what you normally find is there's the first one is just a parking area, then the second one's a petrol station and a cafe and toilets. Mm. Yeah, no, they've all got toilets. Mm. And they're every 5 km. On the French motorway system.
Yeah.
That's where you avoid a lot of it because the lorries, realising that there's going to be traffic there, just pull up into there.
Yeah.
And there's enough of them to spread it out. And if you remember that show we did back in 2015, which I'm sure you do.
Oh, every word.
The big thing that we came out with, we had a big phone-in about it and everything. Mm. And everybody agreed the government were trying to find one place to park 3,000 lorries. And we said that just made the problem worse, yeah? What you need to do is build loads and loads of small ones all over the motorway network. Yeah. So you have 10 here, 50 there, 100 there, 25 there, and spread it out. Have they done that?
No. They've got no common sense, have they, really?
No. But when you go on journeys in England as well, you do find that there aren't that many petrol stations and service stations anymore.
There's the big service areas, which are huge, but
there's no nice little friendly ones.
There's no things like in France where you can just pull off and go to the loo.
Yeah. Which is what you need, just little spaces. Mm. Again, we're a small island and France has got a bit more space, but we need to rethink it.
But even so, you know, one of the reasons we've got no space is because we keep clogging things up.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of that ranting and nonsense and everything. I'm bored with it. I want to talk to somebody really sensible
now. I do.
It's a real pleasure to welcome back onto the show Mr. Mark Telford of Telford's Accountants. Mark, thank you so much for joining us, sitting there patiently listening to us rant away about all kinds of things. We Just give us a little overview of Mark and your business to start with. I mean, you're an accountant and it kind of does what it says on the tin, but you're a little bit special as well, aren't you? Because...
Thanks for saying that.
No, you are, because you were very early adopter of technology. And although it's a bit more endemic now in the industry, a lot of people are still playing catch up with it.
Yeah, firstly, thanks, Paul and Jules. Good to see you again. Good to be back on the show.
Glad I'm alive.
Yes.
we'll do a poll on that later.
yeah, I think talking about technology in businesses, it's very relevant and appropriate, especially where we are now, 2020 onwards. It's really a great enabler, and it's one of the things that I looked at when I started my business. I wanted that ability to provide more of a personal relationship, but not having to see people face to face. So initially that's been online software, and I think from 2020 onwards, just the increased use of tools such as Zoom, Microsoft Teams, Google Hangouts, it's just a great way to stay in touch with people.
Absolutely, yeah. But there's also the other side of the technology, though, which is the digital tools and apps for actually managing your business and managing your accounting functions or, you know, bookkeeping functions, yeah?
Yeah, it's very true. And if I compare now to back in the late 80s, 90s when I first started, the way business is done in accountancy is vastly different, and what it should enable accountants to do, and it does, is provide a far better service for their clients.
Right.
And that's really staying in touch with them, making sure they're aware of what's going on, what they need to do, and just those simple things as that, you know, that receipt that you get for buying that coffee in the morning, what do you do with it? Don't stick it in your pocket and lose it. Take a photo of it.
It's great. I love that. And it's done. Yeah. Whereas I used to have them all in little envelopes, which would have driven you mad.
I've always been really good about receipts and things like that. So I'm still old school. I still keep all mine in my wallet.
I pop them all straight away. I mean, Mark's, your whatever it's called, auto entry, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Other tools are available.
Yeah, it's great. I do it actually when I'm there.
I don't know what I did. I've got auto entry. Mark's my accountant. Just like you, Mark's my accountant as well. And I've got auto entry. But I struggled with that. It was taking forever to load my documents. And I'm going, you know, it's easier if I drive over to Canterbury and give it him. It will be quicker.
Is that your Wi-Fi, maybe?
It could have been, I don't know, but I stopped using it a long time ago.
I absolutely love it. And now you can even add, I don't know whether you always could, but you can add what it's for as well. So you can put business networking or whatever you were doing.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Yeah.
One of my main problems is I'm quite lazy on things like sometimes when I'm buying something, my business credit card isn't on it. Say I'm buying something that I need for work. So I use my Tesco Club card, which is my home one. And then I never get to sort of reimburse that the other way around, so the tax man, you know.
The thing with that, Jules, is as well, you know if you do happen to use the wrong card but you still scan that receipt, it should come through, and on the other side when we're trying to match it, well, it'd be, hang on Jules, we've got some receipts here but we can't find the payment bank statement. And that's where you can say, oh, I must have used a personal card for that one.
That's really good. Because I know I drive Tim Brooker mad. You can imagine, Paul Andrews.
See, that's probably what my problem was initially. Because we years ago, when I was with HSBC, I didn't have a bank card. I had to use my own card. And I have got, and now I'm with Metro Bank. I do have a bank card, but I've never used it.
What, is that a business bank card, you mean?
Yeah.
You never used it?
No.
What do you do then?
I use my own card.
What, a personal one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then how does that work with your accounts then?
I'll send him the receipts.
In a shoebox?
No, in an email.
Okay. Okay, so I've got business cards, and I've got two business cards, actually, thinking of it. But I'm with the FSB Free Banking.
Right.
Which has been a nightmare, absolute nightmare. And then I opened, what did I open?
Nothing is as bad as
Revolut.
HSBC. Nothing is as bad as HSBC, let me tell you.
I'm telling you.
Nothing is as bad
business
as HSBC.
Banking is, poor Tim Brooker was pulling his hair out, and so was I.
I know.
But Revolut is good, I think.
Yeah, a lot of the new banks are good. But I also think here, you know, Paul and Jules, you both touched on a really important point, because we've just been talking earlier about 54% increases in electricity prices.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, all these small costs that you're paying out for in your business, using the wrong card, using cash, you're forgetting about them.
Yeah.
Added up over a period of time, it can be quite a lot of money that you can save.
Yeah. Yeah. Even the car parking and that, if I'm going for a business thing, I tend not to. Ringo sends me a receipt and I...
See, you're just... I don't have a problem with this. In all the years, I've been in business 30 years, and every month I submit an expense return and I have everything on it. Mm. And I mean... everything. I'm worse than an MP. That's how bad I am at claiming my expenses. I claim for everything. Pencil sharpener, bubble gum, parking, 90p parking ticket is on there, mate. Bush.
Yeah, I need to do that a little bit more, be a bit stricter.
Anyway, I want to talk to Mark about something else, and we're kind of running without time. You know, we've recently had a budget statement. There's been some changes to the tax system, aren't there always? But more than that, for the last couple of years, we've had lockdowns and furloughs and all kinds of stuff. And I want your view on this, Mark. I'm seeing a radical change in a lot of areas to the business environment. As you know, my main business is a job portal. And one of the things we're seeing is a lack of candidates. There's 1.3 million unfilled jobs.
Yeah.
It's hard to get candidates. A lot of people have just quit. I've actually got a blog called The Great Quit. Mm-hmm. That somebody, I didn't write it, somebody else wrote it, just highlighting that since 2020, so many millions of people across the Western world have just thrown their jobs in. Mm. They're not claiming universal credit, they just stopped working. What's your view on what's happening, especially amongst the small business market and where things are going?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what kicked off in March 2020 and the restrictions that were all of a sudden placed on us, it made a lot of people rethink what they were actually doing.
Yeah.
You know, this idea of 5 days a week, I'm getting to...
commuting for 2 hours.
A train station at 7 a.m, yeah. I'm not getting home till 8 p.m. Mm. What am I doing all that for?
Mm. Yeah.
And it's led to a large increase in the number of people running their own businesses. Joanna, you mentioned that you started your business in 2020.
Yep.
A lot of people have done that. A lot of established businesses that have got big office spaces have had to change the dynamic of their business, whether that's a smaller team, working remotely, changing the way they do business. And all of a sudden, there's been a shift in the where people work and how they work. And this concept of having to be at a desk from 9 to 5, it's changed.
Sure.
And I think what it has done as well is it's emphasised how important it is to have that really good personal relationship with your team, because they're working from home half the week or most of the week. Firstly, you want to make sure that they're doing the work, but also, really importantly, you need to make sure that they're physically and mentally okay.
Yeah.
So what are you doing to communicate with your team? So it leads quite nicely back into this concept of using technology for your business.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And it's something that we don't kind of think about. When you see people on a regular basis, you just make a value judgment, don't you? You go, you're all right. You know, you're okay. You look a bit, you know, stressy or whatever. If you don't see them, and even if it's just a phone call now and again, you can't always tell.
That's right.
But it's interesting how technology has also enabled a lot of that stuff. You know, there are so many... we had a long rambling argument on Twitter over the last couple of days where there was a guy who he just tweeted, "I never read my work emails ever, and I've got 36,000 unread emails and nobody's ever said anything," right? And it started a huge debate. And then he said... and they said, "But they've just forgotten about you." And he went, "No, I've had pay rises and promotions." So somebody said, "Well, you must have had emails in to tell you." And I said, "Well, can't they just walk up to him and tell him?" And they went, "Well, no, they wouldn't do that." Well, they probably would, you know. But anyway, we had this long rambling argument about it. And then I said, "Well, he could have had a Zoom meeting." And they went, "Aha, to get a Zoom link, you need an email. And I went, well, no, you don't. I've WhatsApped it.
Yeah.
No, nobody does that. Yeah, they do.
I live on WhatsApp. My whole business is run on WhatsApp.
Well, exactly.
Now.
You know, there are so many bits of technology now.
Yeah.
And a lot of that can facilitate stuff, but it can also make life a little bit difficult because, I don't know about you, people go, I go, right, I email. So I spoke to someone the other day about doing so and so and so.
Was it on Facebook Messenger?
Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, Twitter DM, WhatsApp, an email.
Yeah.
And I've got 7 email accounts. You know, where is it?
Me too.
Yeah. One of the interesting things, Mark, is you have a blog about a life plan.
Yes.
And I was promoting
a financial life plan.
A financial life plan, yeah. And I was promoting that, and that's had a lot of traction because people found it interesting. And you've got a book as well that we want to talk about. So talk us a little bit through that, because it's kind of related to what you were just saying about this whole change in the landscape of how people work, not just how they work, but their motivations to work as well.
Yeah, that's right. You know, touching just on what we spoke about a moment ago, this idea of commuting for 4 hours a day, you know, and then all of a sudden you're in lockdown, you've got that 4 hours back, and it's, how can I make use of this more? And then people getting into things during lockdown that they weren't doing before. I mean, for me, it was gardening. I used to detest gardening, but it's great now.
You love it now. How interesting.
Yeah, and that's growing fruit and veg. So
Have you got a big garden?
Yeah, we've got lots of space, so busy time at the moment.
Do you want a greyhound?
No, thank you. So, and it's this idea of people have reassessed what they do and why they do it. Mm-hmm. And then it's that extension. Jules, you touched on it earlier. You're talking about all these subscriptions we have, you know, Netflix, Sky TV, and it goes on and on. Do we really need all of that?
Yeah.
And one of the big things we started promoting for, you know, for our clients and the wider business community was for people to actually know their numbers. This was initially, do you know what you're spending on a personal base level? Because again, early on, we didn't know what was going to happen. How long was this going to last for? How badly it would affect us? How can we cut out all that unnecessary cost and know how much money we need? And then the follow on from that goes to the blog you just mentioned, Paul. It's this financial life plan. It's this idea of how much money do you need? And it then brings us to the book that I brought in.
Wave the book about, so I'm on the video.
Which is it's a book by Paul Armson, and it's how much money do you need for the rest of your life?
Wow. So important, because you look at what's happening, like my mum, who's 91, lovely house, she'll never move, but her pension is smaller and smaller and smaller. All her money is in her house.
We've just had a pay rise. We've just had a pension pay rise. I didn't get it. I got a letter 2 weeks ago saying we're putting your pension up to the maximum.
Yeah.
And they paid my pension yesterday, which was the same as last month. So I contacted them and they went, it only went up. You haven't earned it yet. You don't get the increase until next month.
Sharks. But I think forward planning for the future is something that not many of us have done, and we need to.
I'm fascinated by the book. I want to read that book, but I'm fascinated by the book. But I kind of want to talk about that because it's an intriguing title, and I want to know the answer.
Yeah.
How much money do you need? Now, obviously, that depends on your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depends on what Rishi Sunak does.
But interestingly, and I just want to make this point. Many years ago, I had a lady that worked for me, Jackie, who won the lottery. Okay. And she was in her early 30s and she won £2 million. Yeah.
Wow.
And she came to me and she said, I need help. Yeah. I don't know what to do here. And I said, don't start spending it until you know what you're doing. Within a week, they bought 2 new cars. They moved house, not within a week, but they put the house on the market and bought £1 million, you know, da 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 da. And I said, listen, Jackie, £2 million is nothing. It is not enough, you know. And she said, I'm going to quit my job. My husband's going to quit his job. There is not enough money to spend the rest of your life, not least of which you've started. They sent their kids to private school and stuff like that. I said, you've got to pay for all of that ongoing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then it's the uniforms, the recorder lessons.
But you know, just buying a £1 million house means you've got £1 million council bill and stuff like that. Yeah. Oh, don't even get me started on council tax. So I was looking at that the other day. Apparently, my house is band E because someone in 1837 paid £400 for it or something. I don't know how it works. It was ridiculous. Anyway, but so the amount of money that you need to live the rest of your life is a function of how you spend your lifestyle, presumably.
Very much is. And the basic premise of the book is you need to work out how much is enough.
Yeah.
And people tend to fall into three categories. Those that don't have enough, those that already have enough, and maybe don't know about it.
Yeah.
And those that have got too much, they're actually working and slogging their guts out when actually they don't need to take the foot off the gas.
Yeah.
So it's really going back to that blog, Paul, it's about people working out what they need. Mm. And why, and then planning for it.
Yeah. A thing that interests me in the discussion that you've just kind of laid before us there, and this is something I suffer from a little bit, I think, is I look at it and I go, yeah, but if I stop doing that in terms of being able to earn it, what if the government come along and take that away? And then as I said, I'm 67, so I'm a pensioner, yeah? And I actually, stupidly, you might tell me off for this, Mark, I actually claim my pension, yeah? Mm. And I'm a 40% taxpayer, so I give half of it straight back, yeah? Why did I claim my pension now? Because I don't trust them, that's why. And I thought I'd much rather have half of it now than none of it in a couple of years when the buggers come and take it away again, yeah? And that, for me, is a problem, is how you plan for what governments and politicians do to our economics. I mean, I won't even get into a discussion about fiat currencies and all the other nonsense that causes rapid inflation. But yeah. But for me, that's my worry, is if you rely on something, how can you be sure it will be there when you need it going forward?
That's always a difficult one. And yeah. It's a bit like running a business.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know what's going to happen next year.
January
2020, everything was looking quite rosy.
Exactly, and then
it changed. And I think the key thing is be aware of these things and try and plan yeah. for what you need. So, you know, if you've got an instance where, you know, you have planned out and you think, oh, I'm going to work for another 5, 10, 15 years, but then all of a sudden something happens and you can't, you can reassess and adjust.
Yeah.
But at least you're in a position of you know where you are. Mm. It's a bit like running a business and having a forecast.
Mm.
You know, you've got a good idea where your business is going. Paul, we were talking about your business before, and I know you're very, very financially literate, and you know the financials of your business. You know what you're doing. And in a way, we need to apply that to our personal lives as well.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And a lot of us don't. It's this idea of, you know, I'll ask a question, when are you going to retire? Oh, when I get to 65. Why 65? Oh, that's just when I think I'm going to retire. How much money do you think you need for that? Oh, I don't know. I'll be all right. You'll be all right. How do you know you'll be all right?
Yeah.
And the more and more you ask people, the more they realise, oh, blimey, I need to do something about this.
Mm.
And that's just the message that we're sending out with the blog that I actually wrote last year. And it's a service we're promoting now for business owners. Have a financial life plan.
Yeah.
And people will say to that, well, who should I speak to? Well, it should be a combination of, it'll either be your accountant, or if you've got a financial planner, and I make a distinction between a financial planner and a financial advisor, mm-hmm. a planner will help you plan for when you can afford to retire and what you'll need for that. And between a combination of those two people, they should be helping you work out what you need to do. And if you're there already, great. If you're not, at least you know what you need to do.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? I mean, again, it's another one of those things that I really ought to give up Twitter, because I spend most of my life arguing with idiots on Twitter. People who think they know something but actually don't. And the great one that we've had because of our Chancellor is all these tax experts that have suddenly rocked up on Twitter going, oh, you're not paying tax anyway. Most of them haven't got a clue. I mean, very few, even tax experts, struggle with tax. There's 12,000 pages of the tax code in the UK. As somebody said to me yesterday, It's easy. It's really easy, mate. You just scrap all loopholes. I mean, okay, so you're not going to have a pension or a cash ISA then? What's that got to do with it? Well, that is a loophole. The loopholes aren't there as loopholes. They are there as government incentives to try to get you to do something using the tax system. Yeah? And then when people do, they get slaughtered for using it in the way that they're supposed to use it. But the interesting thing about that is when you're talking about planning, is that, of course, there is a large element of tax planning that has to go into that as well. Yeah. So as an accountant, I'm sure you'd say to me, look, if I was just starting out, you'd say, look, Paul, get a pension, get a private pension and pay money into it when you can because it's tax free until you withdraw it in 40 years time and you can watch your money grow.
Yeah, very, very much about that concept of planning for the future. And we'll often say to people, what are you doing there? And yes, one option is a pension. Another could be you might want to invest in property. Another will be you've got personal ISAs.
Yeah.
And I think a big mistake a lot of business owners make is, oh, I'll sell my business when I retire. Well, okay, COVID has shown us potentially your business could just collapse.
Yeah.
I am a classic example of that, and I don't mind saying. 6 years ago, somebody tried to buy my business. They offered me £6 million for it, and I went, nah, you're joking. Yeah. At the moment, I'm not looking to sell the business, but at the moment, I'm getting people come after me, and they're going, I'll give you $400,000 for your business now. Really, will you? You know, the value isn't always there and it doesn't always go up. We hope it does, but not necessarily.
Another good one on this as well, Paul. I'm sure you know people in this situation. You start a business with a non-family member, a friend, a colleague. You know, everything's rosy when you start out. You rush headlong into that business. And one of the things I say when I come across businesses like that is, have you got a shareholders agreement in place?
Yeah.
And so often people don't. And then when something goes wrong, or one partner wants to do something differently, it's an awful mess to try and unmuddle. And it all comes down to planning.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I've often equated that to like dating or building a personal relationship. Yeah, when you first meet someone, it's all, you know,
lovey dovey.
It's all lovey dovey, and oh, aren't you gorgeous? Yeah. You know, 20 years time, you're going, bitch. Yeah, off you go.
Even 8 years time, 7 year itch.
Oh, I gave it a good go. I equate a shareholders agreement to a prenup agreement in a relationship or something like that, where you set out the terms of what happens when you fall out.
Yeah.
And people don't like that in relationships or business partnerships, because they go, oh, well, we're great, you know, we're gonna rule the world. But there's a classic at the moment. One of the founders of Facebook, Severin, is currently trying to invest in my football club. Yeah. So I was reading up about him. Well, he fell out with Zuckerberg very early on, and the whole thing ended up in court. And this guy won his court case, so they've had to keep him as a shareholder. He's got billions of dollars tied up in the shareholding of Facebook, but has nothing to do with them, and refuses to have anything to do with them. He just sits there and holds the shares, and there's nothing they can do about it because they lost a court case over it. So you're absolutely right. You know, we need to have a plan or an idea. And it's not even, I'm telling you, but I'm kind of asking this in the style of a question.
Yeah.
It's not even about having a set plan necessarily, because it's got to be adaptable as you go forward. Mm. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
It's, again, COVID has shown us that, you know, whatever plan we've got now, we can't just assume that's going to work and that's going to stay the same.
Mm.
But I think just having that information, it means that we're in a better place to adapt to what we get faced with. I mean, a big thing that we tell business owners now is you need to know the numbers in your business. The numbers we'll talk about is tax. Do you know how much tax you need to pay and when? Are you saving that tax? Are you trying to build up a cash buffer? What happened to you in lockdown?
Mm.
What happened to your business? How long were you able to, did you feel as though you were able to survive for? Because, you know, going forward, we're not going to have bounce back loans. We're not going to have job retention scheme for everybody.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of people took out bounce back loans and all these other schemes, we're now starting to head towards the point where they've got to start paying them back.
Yeah.
And of course, they haven't got a business that's traded for the last 2 years in any meaningful way. So they've got to rebuild their business from scratch as well, but starting off with all these loans. I mean,
that's right.
I can only envisage that a lot of those loans will never be repaid and a lot of businesses will fold because they just won't be able to plan their way out of it.
Yeah, and probably a word of warning for any business owners running limited companies to take out a bounce back loan. If you do try and close your business down with an outstanding bounce back loan, your bank will object to that closure and it'll force the company to stay open. So you do need to speak to a specialist if you're in the situation where you feel as though your business has to close down.
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it, how the banks are going to react to a lot of that as well, because they don't want to be writing off loans because it's billions.
I think a lot of small businesses I was talking to were actually reluctant to even take on staff now because of all the increases we've had. National insurance.
Doesn't matter whether they want to or not, they can't get any.
True. They're all at home.
Yeah. Interesting days. I want to come back to this overall planning thing as well, because I think you've hit something, Mark, that's really incredibly important, which is how we conduct our lifestyles in terms of the things we buy. You know, just for what it's worth, I won't bother you because we haven't got time. I've been looking at houses to purchase, but not for me, for somebody else, in the northeast of England, in Newcastle, Durham, Northumberland area. And what you can get up there for what you pay for a dog kennel in the southeast of England is nobody's business. It's just unbelievably, and you're thinking, it's a lovely part of the country
it is.
As well.
Yeah. Why are we all crammed in the southeast London?
Yeah. Why is everyone crammed down here? And I think this is part of where we're going here, is that as more people don't commute to London because they work using technology and remotely, a lot of people might move out. Funny enough, years ago when I was at Citibank, which was over 35 years ago, I worked with a lad called Ed O'Connell, and Ed had a flat in just off Kensington High Street in Camden Hill Road. Okay.
Oh, lovely. Yeah,
lovely, lovely flat. Yeah. We're talking 35 years ago. It was only a small flat, but even back then,
it
was probably worth £500,000.
Yeah.
And he came in one day and he said to me, "I'm moving." And I went, "Oh, right, where are you going?" He went, "Darlington." I went, "Are you leaving?" And he went, "No, it's a 2.5-hour train trip from Darlington to London." Yeah. He said, "I've bought a castle." "And I've still got half my money left."
Yeah.
And he bought a castle in Northumberland, and the nearest place was Darlington. He bought a castle, an actual castle, for what he sold his little flat for in Kensington. And then he commuted. Now, it was a drudge commuting, well, there's no doubt about that. And this was way in the days before you could do anything technically. But now that kind of thing is fairly sensible,
yeah,
because you can move to another part of the country and indeed another part of the world and to continue to do the work you're doing.
Bahamas sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Can you run the radio show from the Bahamas?
I could do a little podcast from there, couldn't I?
Good. Yeah, but this is very true. It's all about this flexible workforce. Mm. And I think, you know, just touching on this recruitment crisis, I suppose we can call it a crisis.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
Paul, you're talking about lots of jobs out there and nobody's applying for them.
Yeah.
When I talk to business owners, they're struggling to recruit because they just can't find the people.
Yeah.
And it's how can we adapt the work environment to get those people back moving into these positions?
We've almost created the perfect storm here in terms of everything that's going wrong with the Western world is in that, you know, this whole last two and a half years, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but it's almost, if you were trying to destroy the Western economy, it's almost the way to do it. basically, we sent everybody home, paid them for doing nothing.
For furlough, yeah.
Then we're surprised when they don't want to come back to work. Mm. We've also ramped the price of everything through the roof so that even if they do come back to work, they still haven't got enough money to pay for everything.
Can't afford it.
You know, we're in... We're, And then you've got businesses closing, on the one hand because they can't continue to service their debt, on the other hand because they can't service their customers because they can't hire anyone. And people are going, do you know what, I might as well give up, especially in hospitality industry.
They're and just the amount of food that they had to throw away in hospitality was just awful, where, you know, we were open, we were closed, open, we were closed. Or we could only eat outside, and, of course, the weather was foul. The amount of businesses that spent money doing outside spaces, creating beautiful outside spaces, heaters and everything, and then the weather was just so bad, you know, typical English weather, it wasn't viable.
Every time you talk about throwing away food, I keep thinking about the bar in America with their vodka. It just makes me die.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you saw it. There was a massive chain. They're a chain of bars in the United States. And when the Russians invaded Ukraine and everybody got very sniffy about it, they took all their Smirnoff vodka and emptied it down a drain. Okay, they just tipped the lot away. And as everybody said, you'd already paid for that, so it didn't hurt anyone. And anyway, Smirnoff is made in Acton, because it's owned by Diageo. It has never been anywhere near Russia. Just because it's vodka, it's not Russian. It's from West London. Mm. And they threw millions of gallons of vodka away, just a fit of virtue signalling.
Mark, going back to your book, how can listeners buy it? Your friend's book?
Yeah, it's not my friend's. This is actually a book I was given by a financial planner.
Okay.
And, you know, one of those things, I got the book, I thought, oh, yeah. Sat on the shelf for a year. And then I read it and I thought, I should have read this ages ago.
Really? Okay, it's that good. So where can we buy it?
So this book is called Enough, and then the subtitle is How Much Money Do You Need for the Rest of Your Life?
Mm.
It's by Paul D. Armson. And again, if you Google it, you'll find it on the Amazon bookstore.
Brilliant. It sounds like a present for my three adult kids, because we weren't very good at talking about money with them when they grew up. Certainly my generation, women never talked, we never talked about money apart from pocket money. But that sounds great.
It is, and it's a really easy read.
Yeah.
It's not technical, but it straight away it gets you
to think about future.
And Paul, who's written the book, he's got a very, very personal story which has driven him to want to do that.
Mm.
Okay.
And it's all this around.
Wonder if we can get him on the show, Paul Andrews.
Yeah, we can try. Future. I want to read the book. I think it's fascinating.
I'm going to get it.
We're fast running out of time, and I want to ask you a left field question.
Yeah,
fine. Yeah. Only because I was listening to a podcast yesterday by a guy. And it was an hour-long podcast, and the first 50 minutes, I'm going, yeah. And then the last 10 minutes, I'm like, nah. He was talking about money, and he was very knowledgeable. He was a university professor, but not an economist. Mm. And he was talking about the history of money, which is something that I kind of speak about a lot when I'm talking to people as well, about what money actually is. It's a token of value transfer. Yeah, it has no intrinsic value of its own. It's only as a token of barter. And he talked about the history of money up until the gold standard, and then we left the gold standard, and everything's gone to crap since we left the gold standard, because we have fiat currency that isn't linked to anything, and government can print it when they feel like it. They, you know, they call it different names and they pretend that they're doing stuff. But and it was fascinating. He told me things I didn't know about why we moved off the gold standard, and it was because they issued bonds for the First World War, and that was the only way they could do it, by removing themselves from the gold standard. But he then ended up talking about Bitcoin. And I listened to the first part of what he said, and I'm thinking, yeah. And then I thought, hold on a minute, it doesn't do that at all. You know, he was saying there's only 24 million in the world, you can't have any more than that. Are you at all familiar with Bitcoin? Are you a fan, not a fan?
I'm aware of it. I'll have to give you a new husband's book, won't I?
Like, Paul, you've got a
yeah,
copy,
I've got a copy
you?
Right, yeah.
I'll have to give you. You didn't get a copy, did you?
No.
How lax of me.
No. Yeah. But again, Bitcoin and the whole concept of cryptocurrency, it's another token.
Yeah.
A measure of value
that
you can use to exchange for goods and services.
Yeah, exactly. And what threw me is in his introduction to the start of it, one of the nice things was he didn't go into the technical stuff around it, you know, about blockchain and all the rest of it, because that just deflects you. Yeah? You know, there's a technical way that you do it and you mine Bitcoin and all the rest of it. But as a currency, as a useful token of exchange, what do you do with it? And he started off, he contradicted himself eventually, because he started off saying, the beauty of this is it won't have inflation. And he goes, hold on a minute. Bitcoin is changing hands at 30. I looked up the price yesterday. It's $33,950.
We're working with a young guy who's, I think he's 24, and just did a Zoom with him. He's made billions with Bitcoin.
Yeah, but it's speculation.
Just unbelievable.
And the whole.
He's going to give it all away, though.
Yeah, no, but the whole, for me, the whole problem with this is, and with fiat currencies, is the reason we have rampant inflation is because we invented the foreign exchange market, and we invented this market in actually trying to make currency a product, make it a thing in its own right. So you sell US dollars, you sell euros, you buy pound sterling, you buy bitcoins, and you sell bitcoins. You don't do anything with them, you buy and sell them, yeah, and you hope to buy at the bottom of the market and sell at the top of the market. It's speculation. Yeah, and that is not what currency was for in the first place, is my opinion. And I don't think Bitcoin is any more of an answer than any fiat currency, if I'm really honest. I don't know what your views on that are, but
there's lots of supporters for it. But you know my view with Bitcoin cryptocurrency is the same as any other form of investment. You've got to be really careful.
Yeah, because you can win or lose.
Yeah, Jules, you've spoken about a young guy who's, you know, potentially made a lot of money when he sells them. On the other hand, there'll be lots of people who lose.
Yeah. What's interesting there is a lot of people have been speculating on cryptocurrencies, not just Bitcoin, but Ethereum and all the others. And there's dozens of them now. And they all come on boasting about how much money they've made. None of them are declaring it to HMRC. And I saw a thing from HMRC the other day saying, actually, it's about time that people started declaring these profits and losses, because we're not seeing them in their tax returns, and we're going to go after them.
Yeah, what is happening now is HMRC have accepted that it's here to stay.
Yeah.
Before they were trying to ignore it.
Yeah.
Now they are. There are discussion groups where they're talking to specialists in this area to say, right, how can we monitor and control this properly? Yeah. And what do you need from our side, rather than HMRC just saying, this is the way it's going to happen and that's how it is.
Yeah.
They're trying to start a dialogue to address it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, it's fascinating talking to you. We've kind of run out of time. We're at the end of the show. I haven't read any emails.
Neither have I. I just want to ask you one last question, because we've got the end. New business starting up, what's the first thing they should do apart from phone you?
I think yes, phone me or one of the team will be very happy to have a conversation with them. But I think that, you know, one of the big things is to have a plan in place. It doesn't have to be massively detailed, but have a good idea of what you're going to do. And I think what's also very important is early on it might be all rosy. But if things don't turn out as well as you'd like them to, you have to have a cut-off point at which you say, this isn't going to work. I need to stop and look at doing something different. Yeah.
And if there's more than one of you in the business, a shareholders agreement.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Mark, thank you so much for all of that. It was a fascinating discussion. Excuse me. Give us a shout-out for your website.
Yeah, it's www.telfordsaccountants.com. Can either contact me in there or feel free to email me direct, mark@telfordsaccountants.com.
And the lovely Fantastic. Tim Brooker, say hello to them, and Lisa, of course.
Okay, we've reached the end of the show. We've got to go. I want to say a huge thank you to our two fabulous guests, Joanna Birch-Jones of Goddess Aesthetics, Mark Telford of Telford Accountants, my stonkingly gorgeous deck chair, Jill Serkin. Our sponsors for this week, We Do Social Media. We'll be back next week. Stay safe, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye for now.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews. This is Channel 2.